Hello and welcome to the very first episode of my all-new podcast, Advertising Not a Funny Business. In this podcast, I'll look at advertising through various lenses like culture, psychology, behavioral economics, content, and technology. Today, I'll decode advertising from the point of view of culture and talk about beauty advertising in particular. Advertising and culture exist in a loopy structure where one influences the other. So for example, India is obsessed with fair skin, beauty equal to fairness, that's a cultural truth. But fairness cream's advertising may add or propagate new cultural meanings like being fair is equal to being successful. So while advertising is developed in the context of culture, at the same time, it also impacts or adds into the culture. The way I'm going to approach every episode is look at the advertising related to the topic I'm going to discuss, read some books around that subject, and also do some soul searching and form my own point of view on the matter. So for today's episode, I went through two books in particular, The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf, published in 1991, and Face Value by Autumn Whitefield Modrano, published in 2016. Beauty Myth draws from the second wave of feminism when women were fighting for equal opportunities for education and employment. And Face Value is a more recent book which also talks about the impact of social media in how we look at the concept of beauty today. So between both the books, I got a wide perspective to learn from. While beauty marketing is predominantly focused on women, and these books also have a strong feminist point of view, I have tried to understand how the beauty culture affects men as well and how beauty advertising for men works. So let's get started. In Beauty Myth, Naomi talks about the unrealistic appearance standard set for women that creates the pressure to look a certain way. She blames the beauty industry, cosmetics, diet, pornography, and plastic surgery industries to create this beauty myth for their own profit. She coins the term the third shift, which is the additional beauty maintenance work that women need to undertake apart from career and housework. You know how women have to worry about their hair, their eyebrows, their upper lips, their underarms, their clothes. It is a lot of work. Beauty myth sets women on the pursuit of unattainable perfection, and yet you never really feel beautiful at the end of that arc. What this pursuit of perfection does instead is make you feel conscious of all your imperfections. I remember being self-conscious as a kid. So I have really tiny eyes and a small nose. I've been called Nepali, Chinese, Japanese all my life. Sometimes it is euphemism like Japani Guria, and sometimes it is as blatant as chinky eyes. I remember this one time, I think I was 11 years old, when our class was preparing a play on Independence Day, where we had to role play as countries. Now, no points for guessing, I was made China. One idiot in my class started making fun of me, saying that I was selected for the play only because of my tiny eyes. And I remember going to the teacher to get some validation because I truly thought it was my talent because of which I got the part. I had auditioned for it after all. I expected my teacher to say it really was my talent, but she laughed it off saying, "Haan, toh kya hua? Choti aankhein buri thodi na hoti hain." Further reinforcing the fact that my small eyes and my small nose was not just a secret family joke. It was for everybody to observe and comment on. I remember I started wearing kajal very early on to deal with my insecurity of not having quintessential beautiful eyes. Funny enough, few years ago when I was boarding my flight from Delhi to Shanghai for a work trip, one Chinese man walked up to me and started talking to me in Chinese. He actually thought I was from his country. I apologized. I also laughed out loud in my head, but somehow it was also a strange moment of self-acceptance. This is who I am. In Face Value, Autumn says that in the language of appearance, beautiful is the queen bee of all the words. There is gorgeous, which is a strong rival to beautiful. Then there is stunning, ravishing, which by the way comes from ravish, that is rape. But beautiful is really the bestestest version of a woman there can be. Then there is pretty, which is pleasant looking but not naturally beautiful. There is lovely, which is indefinite and vague, just like its root word. Then there is unisex words like attractive, hot, or cute, which are more subjective and open to interpretation. Like, although sexiness has plenty of sexual codes like deep cleavage, ripped muscles, mills and boons stuff, we also use it to describe someone who's not conventionally attractive, but who for whatever reason just does it for us. More like the X factor, you know. If I have to describe my appearance, I think I would go for cute. For me, cute has connotations of innocence and childhood that give me comfort. It also doesn't feel like an arrogant word. I feel safe using the word cute for myself. So yeah, cute is my safe word. No, but if somebody else described me as cute, I would definitely hate it. Cute just makes me look childish and saccharine sweet. There is more to me than just my cuteness. It's interesting and complex how we look at ourselves and how we want others to see us can be so contrasting. So I never really thought I was super pretty or anything, but I also clearly remember the first time I realized that I was not quote unquote beautiful. I hated studying, just like most kids, I think. My mom wanted to drive home the point how important it was to study and how I needed to stand on my feet one day. Something that my mom emphasized a lot when we were growing up. So she said, "You know, we're not influential people. Your dad doesn't know someone who knows someone who can help you get through a great college or get you a great job. We're also not rich. We can't give tons of donations to get you in a good college. Nor are you so beautiful that your magic spell will get you ahead in life. So you have no choice but to work hard, study hard, so that you can become financially independent one day." It did motivate me to study at that time. But now when I think about it, I realize how it subliminally put influence, money, and beauty in the same bracket. Beauty is indeed power. However, the reins are not in our hands. It lies with the beholder, remember? We don't see ourselves as we are, but as we are seen. In fact, it is considered shameful to admit that you are beautiful. That's not beauty, that's vanity. And vanity is a vice. I remember this neighbor, she was much older to me. One day we were soaking in the winter sun when I saw her staring into a little mirror. I thought she was looking at her pimple. And then she said, "I have really nice big eyes. My nose is also pointed. And I like how my lips are just right. I have really sharp features, don't you think?" I rolled my eyes. I judged her harshly for being so self-obsessed. But now when I think about it, that was not an act of narcissism. It was a moment of validation that she was still beautiful. That the hideous red zit didn't take away her beauty from her. She was not in control of her own perception of beauty. I remember watching this video. It was a social experiment where a woman goes around with a camera and takes portrait pictures of people, mostly women. And just before she clicks, she explains the purpose of the project and says, "I'm taking pictures of things I find beautiful." The reaction of people captured in that video ranged from surprise, to feeling overwhelmed, to being embarrassed, to this woman in the end who says, "This has been such a great day." After watching that video, I wondered, what is it about being called beautiful that makes all of us so happy? Beautiful is really the ultimate compliment you could give anyone. Amy Schumer brilliantly parodied the phenomena of women negating the compliments they receive in a sketch where women after women respond to compliments with lines like, "No way, are you drunk?" When one woman dares to respond to a compliment with a simple "thank you," the other women immediately kill themselves out of sheer shock. We have built a narrative around women and beauty that allows women far more space to talk about the ways they don't like their looks than to talk about the ways they do. In other words, beauty is something to aspire to strive towards, but never to comfortably and openly claim as our own. I was 12 years old when we moved from Ghaziabad to Ahmedabad. This was the first time we were living in a condominium, and we had a big balcony where I liked to sit every evening. One day, as I stood in my balcony enjoying the view from the fourth floor, I noticed a guy standing on the terrace of the building next to us. He was looking at me. My first instinct, like every other Indian girl, was to ignore him. Soon he started appearing on the terrace every day, right when I would be in the balcony. Now I came from a convent girls' school and I had a poster of Hrithik Roshan in my bedroom. My idea of boy-girl relationship was based on Rockford and Kahona Pyare. I was also a hyper introvert, not very good at making friends with strangers. So he did make an attempt to talk to me once or twice, but I think I said something rude and I ignored him. And then one day, he stopped appearing on the terrace. I was happy, initially. But after a few days, I realized I missed the attention. In all honesty, I was enjoying being looked at, as long as I didn't have to talk to him and I could curl back into the safety of my house. But I was so curious about his disappearance, I cycled all the way to his block with a friend by my side. Of course, I didn't tell her why we were there. And then I went to that terrace. He wasn't around. And that episode ended there. But the act of going all the way to his block because I craved his attention filled me with a lot of shame for many years. I thought I had stooped really low. I was 12 years old then. And that was my first experience of feeling shameful for my desire to be seen. So what I'm trying to say through these stories is that while media, advertising and beauty industry has been imposing an unrealistic beauty standard for women and fueling our anxieties to be the best versions there could be, the society is making sure we remain powerless in our beauty, hanging between fear of vanity and fear of shame, never claiming beauty as something that belongs to us. Now let's take a look at how beauty advertising works. Within beauty, there are many different product segments like skincare, hair care, makeup, body care, perhaps also apparel and perfumes. Basically, any brand that wants to help women and men look good, feel good. Now, although mostly I would be using examples for women because beauty advertising is skewed towards them, a lot of it applies to men as well. And I will come to specifics of male beauty advertising as well. First thing that comes to my mind when I think of beauty advertising is makeovers. Transformation is the obvious message of most beauty brands. That's the whole point of using beauty products. But subconsciously, it also reinforces your anxiety that in reality, you are an ugly duckling who needs a makeover. But what is even more worrying is the narrative that this transformation will make your life better. You become fair in 4 weeks, you'll get the job you want. You look younger, you will do well in life. This kind of narrative is not only problematic, but it's also not true. Of course, looking good, smelling good makes you confident, that helps you crack that interview or catch someone's attention. But that also implies that without the products, you are nothing and your self-esteem is attached to the products you use. And consumers these days are perceptive of such underlying messages. So first of all, I think beauty industry needs to drop the notion that they are doing women some big favor and making our lives better. Every time we talk about beauty advertising, we talk about Dove's Real Beauty campaign. Dove's Real Beauty campaign was launched in 2004, featuring quote-unquote real women with cellulite and thick thighs and rolls of flesh previously unseen in advertising. It was a pleasant shock for everyone. So there was also a video called Evolution that showed the process of how ad images are consciously created and manipulated, ending with a placard that said, "No wonder our perception of beauty is distorted." While the campaign celebrates the diversity of beauty and promotes self-acceptance, what it also does is reinforce women's insecurities. You are fat, your beauty is real. You are short, your beauty is real. You are dark, your beauty is real. Reminding women again and again that it is their weight, their height, their skin color, and the way they look that defines their beauty. Advertising like this presumes that there's something about women that needs fixing. Whether it's her inability to live up to the beauty standard or her inability to accept herself as she is. Over the years, there have been many extensions of Dove's Real Beauty campaign. There was beauty sketches where women seemed to be more generous in describing others' beauty than their own. There was the door campaign where women were given a choice to walk into a door named beautiful or a door named average. All these ads still focus on women's looks. But in one of their recent ads, they started revealing the professions of the people they shot, and the narrative was around how their looks don't define what they can do, which I thought was definitely a step towards a more progressive way of talking about beauty. So the real question really is, why must women care about beauty at all? Which was actually Naomi Wolf's original question in Beauty Myth. Why can't we be enough the way we are? One could argue that a well-groomed person creates a more favorable impression and therefore has a better chance of getting ahead in life. But your looks alone cannot take you far. You have to excel in what you do, right? Look around. Are all the successful people around you beautiful? Now, I'm also not talking about the importance of inner beauty. Nobody knows what it means. Does it mean being a good person? It just sounds like a consolation prize compared to a more obvious definition of beauty, which I think is glamour. Beauty is about the response it generates. The awe, the admiration, the compliments. Now, I'm not saying that women dress up or do makeup to please others, because when they do it for themselves, it does not feel like an act of beautification. It is an act of self-love, pampering, self-care, self-expression. You know, like L'Oreal says, because you're worth it. Which is to say, do this for yourself. You deserve this. Almost like giving women the permission to think about themselves. So what makes someone feel beautiful is the reaction they receive. Beauty truly lies in the eyes of the beholder, because beauty needs validation. So this validation could come in the form of, I want you. So you feel desirable, you feel attractive. Or their response could be, I want to be you. So you feel you are admired, you feel you are a role model. Or it could be of utter disbelief. Is that you? Making people curious if she's born with it or if it's Maybelline. But this kind of beauty narrative is still focused on the looks. It makes you feel like a celebrity. It is perhaps inspiring, but it is not relatable. For that matter, beauty as a construct is not relatable at all. Selfie culture and social media filters give us the illusion that we have control over our self-image. Instant validation, instant boost in self-esteem helps us feel great about who we are. It allows us to present ourselves the way we want and create a well-crafted self-image. But do we also end up alienating ourselves from who we are? How I look in my selfies is very different from how I look in my mirror. It's very different from how I look in a picture taken from a distance of 2 meters. Which picture truly captures what I feel about myself or how I want to see myself? Social media makes all of us, men as well as women, self-conscious and self-obsessed. With the apparent control over our self-image, are we really expressing our authentic selves on social media? Or are we taking solace in showcasing the best version of ourselves that we can never be in real life? Honestly, I'm quite done with the narrative of being the best version of yourself. The strive for continuous self-improvement is great. But can we stop talking in superlatives of what we must be? Gillette launched the Best Men Can Be global campaign in Jan 2019, addressing toxic masculinity, urging men to hold other men accountable and being their best selves. It faced a lot of backlash, turning out to be one of the most disliked videos on YouTube with 1.6 million dislikes. Reason? Hashtag not all men. These men felt that Gillette was wrongly stereotyping all men as abusive monsters. In November 2019, Gillette India launched a new campaign featuring a real-life story of Lieutenant Colonel Manoj Kumar Sinha. The ad is titled Man Enough and slams the stereotype of boys don't cry. What's great about this communication is that it's not preachy, although it has a message expressed emotionally and sensitively. It does not talk about how grooming is important or how you are more than your looks or how because of your looks you'll do really well in life. You know, the common tropes of female advertising that I talked about. There's another men's brand that has successfully made the shift from the quintessential beauty advertising codes of glamour and attraction to something more relevant for today's generation. I'm talking about the chick magnet brand Axe. We all remember the quintessential Axe ads with angels falling from the sky and the other one with hundreds of women running behind a guy on the beach. Axe launched a new campaign in 2006 titled Find Your Magic. It talks about individual quirks that make you who you are. There is no competition, there is no I'm better than you are better than me. The campaign moves away from standard masculinity codes and urges people to embrace their uniqueness. Gillette India's Man Enough campaign and Axe's Find Your Magic campaign are still doing a much better job, I think, in taking the perception of beauty away from the physical attributes of fair, young, rosy, soft, glowing. These brands have moved away from the functional benefits of their products to more emotional and psychological impact of having a high self-esteem and a life unhindered by beauty woes. I couldn't find too many examples in female beauty advertising that truly break the mold and say something honest without objectifying or sexualizing women. But then I found one that took me by surprise. It is Sephora's latest campaign called Unlimited Power of Beauty. It takes you on a journey of a woman's life from when she was a young girl, when she is first introduced to the concept of beauty, to her old age when she finds strength in the wrinkles on her skin. The ad beautifully communicated the complex role of beauty in a woman's life, and I was happy to see Sephora trying to be true to women's reality without challenging it. In essence, what I feel... Yeah, we are coming to the end of the episode. Yeah, so in essence, what I feel is we don't need to be the best versions of ourselves. As long as we can be true to who we are, be self-aware, take pride and joy in being ourselves. Not just accept ourselves, but also build and remember who we are deep down. Hold on to our truth, express ourselves without self-consciousness, without judgment and without punishment. Oh wait, there is more. Thank you for listening to this episode. Hope you guys had fun. But remember, advertising is not a funny business. At the end of every episode, I'm going to throw a few questions at my audience because I would love to hear your stories and learn from your life experiences as well. So the first question, what is your earliest memory of feeling beautiful or not beautiful, handsome, not handsome? What was that moment when you came to terms with beauty for the first time? Question number two. If you had to describe your beauty in one word, what word would you choose and why? Also, if there are any beauty ads that you think I missed and it really impacted you, I would love to know about that. So please write to me. You can email me at advertisingnotafunnybusiness@gmail.com. You can follow me on Instagram at advertisingnotafunnybusiness. You can find me on LinkedIn as Snigdha Bose. And you can call me at 9818... I'm not an idiot. It was meant to be a joke. Okay, that's it for today. Thank you guys. See you in the next episode. Ta-da!